Welcome to the Human and Technology Podcast. This podcast is for anyone who develops, distributes, or uses technology. For all those who always have the feeling that technology overwhelms or dominates them. For everyone who wants to know how to deal with technology in everyday life. For anyone who wants to understand what technology does to us and how we can get our lives back. This podcast is for those who want to make technology sexy. All the product developers, designers, UX, UI professionals, product managers, CTOs, and CEOs. And it is for you. My name is Dr. Peter Ryska. My friends call me Dr. Peter. I am your host, and I am happy that you are here. This is the second part of the creation process episode that we have. So last week we talked about things like building scenarios, like creating use cases, doing all the preliminary work that you need to do design in HMI. And this week it is more about the technical aspects. How do I use all this information to create the output required to implement an HMI solution? If you have not heard last week's episode, I recommend that you go back there, that you listen to that, and then come back here and listen to the second part. And once you have done all the preliminary activities like the analysis of various data and then put up scenarios, use cases, personas, you run a couple of rounds of creativity processes, then it's time to get down into the, let's say, core development of a concept, into the core development of the HMI. Whereas core does not mean that any of the other activities you have done already is anyhow has less value. But now we're going to produce documents, data, files, things that will be found one way or the other, directly or indirectly, in the final product. So it's a very indirect connection between a feature and a product and all the analysis you had done up front. But the day will come when you have a direct influence on what will be on the market, what will be in users' hands. And well, this is what we're going to talk about next. And we start with the rough concepts, the generic concepts, you may call it, the starting concept, the overview concept. There are various names out there, but I will use the word rough concept opposed to the detailed concept that will come later. So if you think about a rough concept, you may think, for example, about HMI technologies. Very often they're already given, even long before you start a project. A typical HMI technology, for example, is a touch screen, or is a voice recognition system, or is a keypad that you have, or a keyboard that you may have. That maybe the traditional computing setup, if you design a website or if you design some PC software, then you will know that you have a screen and a keyboard and a mouse. And those are the HMI technologies. And for me, when I work with my clients, they had already made a decision before I come in. And very often I find out that this decision may be a bit stupid or at least doubtful. One example, I worked for a company that produced welding machines. And so I don't know whether you are aware in which context these welding machines are used. It's dirty, it's noisy, it is very uncontrolled, it might be super tight, so it is very uncomfortable. And people using welding machines, they usually wear leather clothes, they wear leather gloves, they wear helmets with visors. So it is a pretty rough and pretty tough environment you're in, and the distance between the user and the technology is pretty big due to all these protections that this person has. And then my client came up with the idea, hey, we have an HMI innovation. We will use touch screens on our welding machines. And it was a pretty tough way to tell them, to convince them, to teach them that this is not a good idea. Of course, if you have your welding machine in a well-protected production environment, if it is a laboratory style of factory, no problem, you can use touchscreens. And if it is automated processes so that you just put in a couple of parameters and then the machine works by itself, no problem. But if you have a look at, for example, a car shop or any kind of boat builder, boat workshops, there they work under such harsh conditions that touchscreens simply do not make any sense. And so you have to make these decisions at one point in time that you say, okay, we have a certain user group, we have a certain environment, we have a certain target market, and what technologies make sense in this context? Another thing you may think about if it's about a rough concept is what will be displayed where? And I call this the liquid HMI, meaning that particularly in cars, if you have a car dashboard, but that's happening in other cockpits and other complex control environments as well, that that you can choose, or that you can have different locations where information may be displayed. One example, if you have a car and you have the speed of the car, you can display this in the cluster instrument, but you can also show it in the head-up display. Or if you have an incoming call, you can show this on the center stack display, you can show this in the cluster instrument, or you can show this in a head-up, or you can show it in all of them, or just two of them. And so the question, what will be displayed where, is a core thing that you should do during the rough concept phase. Just by having an idea, all right, we're going to show this information on display A and another information on display B. And then we have display C, or we have maybe some oral output that we will use. So that is part of the rough concept phase. And the same is for the manipulation. So if you have various means of manipulation, for example, voice and a steering wheel device and a touch screen, there was the MBUX, the first version of Mercedes, the latest infotainment cockpit system they had. They even had a touchpad there. So they had at least four different instances, four different HMI technologies to manipulate information, to steer things, to control things. And do I do it by voice? Do I do it on the touchscreen? Do I do it on the steering wheel? And so, again, you have to make a decision. What will I manipulate with what device? Then the question, which information will be displayed in which way? So do I have, for example, a digital speed? So for example, showing the figures 5 and 0 for 50 kilometers per hour. Or do you have a needle on an instrument, on a traditional instrument, or is it even on screens? We very often have these needle instruments. And how do I show this? How do I show the charging level of my battery? How do I show a music title? And you know, how will I do this? Again, we can start with a very generic, very rough ideas about OS1 and later on drill them down into something detailed and more concrete. Then one core question, which I find is one of the most important questions in this phase and which is very often ignored in HMI development processes, that is the questions: how do interactions work? How do I interact with a system? What do I need to do what? So how do I type in or how do I put in a destination into a navigation system? How do I steer the temperature in some kind of chemical process? How do I do this? And how do I get the information? How do I get the information of what I have done? And how do I get the information about possible differences between what I want to do and what I have actually done? And there are all this, let's say, the more static part of it, the menu trees, that is pretty often ignored, or yeah, let's do some menu tree. And also the dynamic part of the interactions, the processes. Questions like, for example, what happens if I do activity A and then a highly prioritized activity B needs to be performed? How do I get this information? Are there any overlays, or is something faded out, or is there a separate display for this? And all these things, they do a lot with the quality of the product at the end. They steer enormous amounts of the usability, enormous amounts of the user experience. Then we talked about different roles in different systems. How do these roles influence the interaction scenarios, the manipulation possibilities, location of information? How is all that changed when I change the role? And part of that, for example, is which is my main screen, which is my main interaction device, which is my main interaction scenario. And then I may have secondary and tertiary functions that I need to control, that I need to do, and how are they covered, and how do I define what is a primary function, what needs to be in the core of the interaction process, and what is a secondary or tertiary activity that may be on a lower prioritized interaction device. So with this, you start, you think about the technologies, what will be shown where, what will be manipulated where, how will things be displayed and manipulated, how are interaction scenarios designed, and what are primary, tertiary, secondary and tertiary information. How do you do this? How do you work with these rough concepts, with the generic concepts? My idea, my favorite way of working in this phase is think on paper. Take a sheet of paper. I have my notebooks with me all the time. I make scribbles there. Take a larger sheet of paper, draw on it, paint on it. And one of my clients in Shanghai, a Chinese company, they had in every meeting room, they had glass walls, and then they had pens that you could use to write or draw on these glass walls, and you could delete it. And I found it very, very inspiring, very positive to just grab a pen. And we were discussing about a lot of automotive technology, just sketching a one-to-one size dashboard, a steering wheel, maybe the paddles, and then a couple of displays, the entire dashboard, and then discuss with these people. Talk to them, hey, where do you want to show this? How about a head-up display here for this information, and can we remove it from there? And so it's very easy, very fast, very direct, and very flexible to do this either on paper or even better on these glass walls with the pens. And at the end, if you're done, you can take a picture of this. You can make a photo with your smartphone to store it and to continue working on this. But for the very first creative phase, for thinking about this, how do we do it? How do we continue? Where do we do what? And how do we do this? This thinking on paper or on glass is a very, very good thing. Then you may use some text to describe it. You may add it to the sketches that you did. You may put an extra document where you say, okay, we have a couple of rules we always follow. For example, there's always a back button on the upper left on the touchscreen, or we'll have different color codes for different sub-functions. We will always have this font, or we will have a minimum font size of this size, and so on and so on. So these are things that you can put down in text files. If you work with 3D products, let's say real products, not only screen designs, paper prototypes are very good. You can just glue them together with pieces of cardboard or pieces of paper and work with them. You can also produce, if you have an app or a PC application or some screen design, then you can also work with paper and pencil prototypes. So maybe you take 10, 15 pieces of paper in the size of your targeted screen, and then you draw your main screens on this. Okay, this is the entry screen. This is what the user sees first when the app is started. And then the user presses this button, and then you draw another screen that pops up when the user is doing that, is performing the action. And so you can create paper and pencil prototypes. Also very flexible, a little more elaborated than the thinking on paper in the very first step, and a little more flexible, a little more interactive. And I have done studies for my clients where we used these paper and pencil prototypes to do the very first usability feedbacks, to just go out, ask a couple of people, hey, imagine you have this on your screen and you press this button. What do you expect? Which screen should pop up? And then they can select from the 10, 15 pieces of paper you have the right screen. And then you can ask them, okay, is this something you understand? Is this good or bad? Could it be anyhow more elaborated? And so on and so on. So you can do something already with this and already collect a couple of user feedbacks on this one. Another tool that I really like is mind mapping. There are various open source free mind mapping tools available on the internet. And if not, the ones you have to pay for are not that expensive. But having one on your PC is almost a must if you are an user experience, user interface, HMI designer. And you can use this for various things, for example, collecting and sorting information, for example, building menu trees. I have a function here, where does it belong? You have the main functions, and then you have the sub-functions and your sub-sub-functions, and they can have all these discussions, and you can share it. You can discuss it with your colleagues and with other involved parties. And based on this mind map, you can have then a menu tree, or you can have a collection of information, and you can sort it. And I'm using these mind maps in various contexts. For example, my podcast planning, the production plan is a mind map. So I have various, I have an English podcast and I have a German podcast. And then I have the different, more professional, more public or more popular items I want to talk about. And so I'll sort them through and maybe I collect some information into this mind map. There is this website, that book I could talk about. And so it's very good and very visual and very easy to understand if you create a mind map. You can do pretty much the same with an Excel sheet or with a Word table. It is possible, and I have done this in the past. And if you have tons of written information or even maybe numbers and figures you want to deal with, then an Excel may be a good tool. From my point of view, it has a lower priority than all the others I have mentioned. And at the very end, there is one thing that I heavily recommend if you work on rough concepts. That is called wireframing. Wireframing basically means that you put down your screens, your idea of a certain screen, of an interaction status, as the name says, as a wireframe. So it is lines, black lines on white paper, or black pixels on a white background if you work on a screen. And then you sketch your screen. You say, okay, this is my entry screen. If I open an app, I have this one here. If I turn on a system, the very first screen is this one. And then you say, I have, six buttons on it. And I have a headline and I have a bottom line. And I have a swiping symbol, an icon that indicates me that I can swipe the screen. And you put all this in a black and white way without any design, without any, this needs to be blue, this needs to be black, and then I need to have an orange highlighter, whatever. None of that. It's only just the structure of the screen. It's the construction of a screen that you have. And there are a few wireframing tools out there. I'm not aware of any open source free. But they're not enormously expensive, but they're enormously helpful. And whatever tool you have, then none of them is perfect. None of those I know is total rubbish. Just try a few, maybe in a free version, a free license, and find out the one you like most. But wireframing, if you want to develop an HMI, is a very useful thing. And some of them even allow to relate screens, wireframed screens, to each other. Saying, okay, you have the entry screen with six buttons on it. And if I press the upper left button, then I jump to a certain screen with a certain content in it. And you can do this. You can create these relationships in the wireframing tool. And then already set up a small prototype. And again, use that for first usability feedbacks, user feedbacks that you may want to collect. All right, let's move on to the detailed concept. So you had a rough concept, and then we go on with a detailed concept. And again, you can do a lot of wireframing in this phase. You can elaborate your entire complete full HMI and wireframes depending on the kind of product, depending on the process that you have, and depending on the relationship between those people that develop the HMI concept and those that implement the software. A full wireframe concept may be useful. Very often it is overshooting a bit. So it depends on the environment you're in. It depends on the product you have. It depends on the entire concept, whether a full wireframe concept makes sense or not. And then you start with a graphic design. Go and say, okay, I want to have a blue background. I want to have a yellow font, I want to have whatever, all these things. And there are professionals for this. There are graphic designers, there are screen designers, there are media designers. These guys are very well educated, and if you're one of those, congratulations. You know a lot about how to design information and interfaces on a visual basis. If you're not one of these guys, don't do graphic design. So I myself, I'm not a graphic designer, and I won't do any graphic design by means of selecting colors, selecting shades, making final arrangements of elements of components on a screen. I just don't do it. You then continue to think about the distribution of information on the screen. Where is what is showing where? You elaborate menu trees. How do you arrange the information? How do you sort it? What belongs where? Where do users search for it? Then you design the entire interaction. So if I press this button, that happens, or if I make a voice command and also at the same time I press a button, what happens then? So those are the things that you do when you design the interaction. For example, the back concept is a very important one. So you will probably need some kind of back button, back functionality. How is that designed? Is it more a historical back? Is it a hierarchical back? All those are details you work on when you are in the phase of a detailed concept development. Then you start prototyping. You build prototypes on various levels. We already talked about paper and pencil prototypes, about paper and cardboard prototypes for products that you may have. You may then go on beyond the wireframing prototypes into, let's say, more real prototypes using a more elaborated design. The thing with prototyping is you can spend enormous amounts of time and money into prototyping. And then at the end of the day, if you, for example, do this with a PC prototyping tool, you will find out it will never work on an embedded system like in a car or in a plane or on a smartphone. It just doesn't work. And so you will need tools that allow prototyping for a certain target platform, for a certain system that you design for. And there are a few of them out there that you can use, and none of them is really good. But none of them is real rubbish again. So you can use all of them. They all have their strengths and weaknesses. They all have their history. They all have their focus points. But you can go out there and just to name drop a few. Candera is one. Kenzie Writeware is one. Qt is one. Electrobit Guide is one. So all these are tools that are for prototyping, and this is the strong point, for all of those mentioned, also for the final implementation. So you have a smooth handover then in that area. And this is the final point here on the detailed concepts for the moment. How do I design the interface towards the software implementation? What tools do we use to make all these detailed concepts? In the early phases, you can use Office tools. You can use these open source tools that I meant. You can use wireframing tools. Then if it gets down to, let's say, towards an implementation, towards creating a product, other tools will come in. For graphic designers, it is still Adobe Photoshop, which is the top priority number one. There are a few others out there, particularly for the Apple world, that may take over in the future. But at the moment, see Photoshop as the standard, which is set in graphic design. Then I talked about the prototyping tools. I already mentioned a few of them. There are more than I mentioned. Have a look at them. And then there are the implementation tools, which may be the same like the prototyping tools, but they may be different. And so you have to prepare all of this for the implementation. I every now and then mentioned that you can do a user feedback, that you can do a usability test or collect user feedback. And there will definitely be at least one, probably a row of episodes on usability testing, on user experience testing. How do you do this? How do you cut your user group and then all these things? Your participants, how do you select them? And then what processes do you apply? What statistics, statistic analysis do you run? So just a very quick look at this one, but be aware that at any point in time during the entire process, you will need user feedback. You will have your usability gates in the development, and you can have various tools for this. Just to mention a few, focus groups is inviting people, having open discussions with people. They may be users, they may be professionals. If you design something for pilots, you invite 3, 4, 5 pilots and interview them and show them what you have done, what your thinking is, and collect the feedback. So this is a focus group. Another one is expert rating. You can invite experts, which may be people like me, and they either have a look at your product, at your thoughts, at what you want to do, or we apply standardized tools to get, let's say, a more neutral, less subjective rating on a certain HMI, on a solution, on the usability, on what will work and not. Then we have paper and pencil testing. Draw your HMI, draw your UX, UI that you have and show it to people, talk to them. And then if you go on, you can have quick little usability tests. Maybe you have, 5 people you invite, and you have 10, 15 tasks to solve, and you watch them, you ask them, you do this. As I said, we will have at least one, probably more than one episode in the near future on usability testing. Or you have a large scale usability study, which means 20, 25, 30, maybe even 100, 150 people you invite with a very formal setup, laboratory style lab setup, with a high number of data collection tools that you apply with a, let's say, process, with a strategy behind this. And you will probably not do every day or on a regular basis big usability studies, but 2 or 3 during a 1 year process is the normal rate that you have if you want to bring a complex product to the market. Okay, so what do you deliver? What do you produce? What documents do you produce? What is the result of your work? The, let's say, physical result that you have. And the first thing is the specification. You need to have a document at the very end that describes your HMI solution. And this combines a verbal and graphical description of your HMI. It describes the functions, the tasks, the basic structure of the system. You will maybe have some wireframes in this. You will have all the screen contents and structures in it. You will have menu trees, the entire structure of the system, the sorting. And you will describe all the processes, the interaction processes that run in a system. And the size of a specification depends on various factors. One is the complexity of the HMI, of the system, of the technology that you want to specify, that you want to make an HMI for. So if it is a very easy, very simple thing, you maybe have 3, 4, 5 pages of specification. The smallest one I ever had for a car navigation or for a car infotainment system was 40 pages, which was definitely not the final one. It was just a rough description of the system. But the biggest one I ever had was just the written specification, was about 1,500 pages. 1,500 pages to describe a system. And as I said, the complexity is one factor. Another factor is the interaction between you as a designer, as a UX, UI designer, as a person that writes the specification, that has the idea, that has developed the concept for the HMI on one side, and on the other side, those that implement it. And if you work in the same team, if you sit in the same office, if you work closely together anyway, specification may be shorter, maybe more condensed. But if these implementing people, so if you sit in the US or if you sit in Europe and your implementation team sits in India or in China or in Malaysia and any faraway location, then you will need a more detailed, a bigger, a larger specification. So this, from my experience, is a very important thing that you say, okay, I have a very complex HMI, and the people that will write all the software, that will construct all the electronics hardware, that will do all the mechanical hardware, they are far away from me, and I cannot talk to them on a, let's say, minute-by-minute or at least hour-by-hour basis. Then you will need to have a lot of more specification, a bigger specification compared to, I have a super easy small product and the guy writing the software is sitting on the other side of my desk and he was involved in any step. So basically we all know what we want to have and I just need to put down a couple of things. So those may be two extremes that you can find in reality, that you can find in product design departments. Then you produce graphics. As I said, whenever it gets graphic, there are professionals for this. And I know that many of my listeners are graphic designers, screen designers, and media designers. And if you're not, don't mess with them. They know what they do. They're professionals in this. They've learned this. And of course, you can discuss it with them. You can give your input. But if graphic designer says, no, I need to do this this way, that way, just believe them. And what their outputs are graphic designs. The graphics today are prepared to be implemented into software tools. So there are these development tools I've mentioned, and whenever they are, and there's any of these out there, every tool of this needs a specific preparation of the graphics before it's implemented into the software. So there are certain components like icons, lists, scroll bars that need to be extracted, the layering of the graphic, the background versus the frame versus the buttons needs to be in a certain way, arranged in a certain way, needs to be named in a certain way, or if you have a button and you have an active and inactive and an available and a non-available status, so these different statuses are connected to this. And as I said, this is a very, very detailed and long process that you need to run, and it heavily depends on the implementation tools that you apply. All right, and then at the very end, you may produce a style guide, which is a generic description of the HMI. You may have a company style guide. So it says, my company, ABC, uses the color orange as blue as main colors, and we have black and white for fonts and writing, and we use this font, and so on, and so on, and so on. So this is a company style guide. Then you have a product style guide that is more focused on a single product. You may also have corporate HMI, corporate identity style guides, which are closely connected to the company style guides. These style guides, as I said, describe, we have the corporate color. For example, Beyond HMI has the corporate color dark red, which in RGB is 128.00. You can try that on your PC, 128.00. That's the Beyond HMI color. And so documents and HMIs and whatever is maybe connected to Beyond HMI will have this color, this dark red color somewhere. These style guides, they give a certain standard. They are a certain standard. They give a certainty. Make sure that you do not do total nonsense. So they give you a ground to stand on, but they also create unflexibility. So if you say, this orange and blue doesn't really look good in an HMI, and then the corporate guys can, no, we need to keep the corporate colors. And you say, oh, but it's very hard to reach an orange font on the blue, dark blue background. So, yeah, there is fighting on this. And there's, I never had a project with a marketing department with a corporate style guide involved, where we did not reach the point where we had to really think how far can we hurt the corporate identity, the corporate style guides, the company style guides to get a good usability and easy legibility and ease of use and a good user experience. But this is something that you will need to solve on every single project. There's no way around this. All right, let's summarize. If you have a user-centered design process, you have in the very first phase, that was another episode of the Human Technology Podcast, you have these analysis, you have the results of the analysis, you know who your users are, you know what kind of product you have, you know about anything about the legal restrictions, you know your target markets, you know your intercultural issues that you have, and then you have all these results involved there. Then you know something about roles, personas, and use cases. You have the scenarios developed, and you put this one into rough concepts. And these rough concepts, they describe in a rough way, in a generic way, how the concept is. What is displayed? Where do I need to show what? How do I manipulate what? What kind of technologies are involved? That is all in the phase of making a rough concept. And then you may have the first usability gate there, the first quality gate. You have to put your concept through. And then you get more and more into detailed concepts. And you say, yes, I have this detailed concept here, and I'm working on this and this and that. And then you make another usability gate to fix it. And at the very end, you deliver an HMI specification, and you deliver the graphics to the people who implement your HMI solution. That's it for today. Thank you for spending time with me. I hope you were able to take something with you and do something for yourself that will be forever. For an ongoing exchange, you will find me on LinkedIn and on my websites, peter-rusker.com and beyond-hmi.de. Write me an email on the podcast at beyond-hmi.de. Tune in next time, take care, and stay healthy.